Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Hey everyone, welcome to Absurdity. If you're new here, this is an exploration of the absurd in all things religion, culture, and society. And when I say all things absurd, really what I mean is all things that we find absurd. And hopefully, if you're here and you stay, it's because you've resonated with something that we've talked about. I'm really excited to be joined by my co-host, Tony Anoboli. So, Tony, how are you doing, man?
He's taking
a selfie.
I'm doing really good.
We gotta do that Instagram promotion.
We got a promo.
It's
National Siblings Day when we're recording this, and I just want to make sure before the day is out, so the peak time they're actually saying to post stuff is like 2:30 and 8 at night, and so I'm a little bit late, but I'm hitting just about one of the peak times to post it. So I'm putting it out there so that people can see and appreciate it. I would have put it earlier today, but I forgot.
There you go. All right. So before we jump in to today's episode, or this week's episode, I guess, this episode, I don't know when you're listening. You could be listening to this like 8 months
that's
later.
That's the cool thing.
Just this episode.
Yeah, that's the one cool thing about not being live, or at least being recorded, rather, because you can do this live and then record it. But like someone can hear this anytime. Like eons
about
from now.
About half of our downloads. You want me to go?
No, go ahead.
Is that what we're doing here?
Go for it.
About half of our monthly downloads come from people going back and downloading old episodes. And that's wild to me. That's just so cool to see that people are going back and listening and finding topics that they resonate with. It's really cool. And to see that happen consistently too, is just really cool. So, but a couple of things before we jump into today's episode. The first off is it is April 15 that we are releasing this episode, but we're recording it before April 15, which means that I can't announce the winner of the giveaway on this episode because we don't have one yet at the time of recording this. So the winner of the giveaway has been announced, or at least will be announced by 7 p.m. Eastern time on our Facebook page, facebook.com/absurditypodcast. So if I can tell who you are based on your iTunes name, then I'll announce it with your name. If not, I'll announce it by your username, and I need you to claim it. So I need you to come and claim it if I don't know who you are. So, but feel free to reach out, go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/absurditypodcast, and go ahead and send us a direct message so that we know who you are. So that's it for the winner of a $50 Amazon gift card. I will send it your way as soon as I know who you are.
Yay!
And on the other... So that's us giving you money.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, on the other side of this, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/absurditypodcast. Yes. You like how consistent my URLs are? If you want to donate and support this, Patreon is like the monthly version of Kickstarter, where you can keep supporting your creators that you follow. And we do ad-free episodes for every tier, and we do bonus episodes per month for... are on a monthly basis for those who donate $5 or more per month. So go on, head over there. I have some cool plans coming their way in the future as that community grows. But today, Tony, talking about a growing community, look at that segue. I am really excited to talk about this. You sent me this, actually. So you sent me an article from Relevant on Twitter. This is how we discuss all of our episode.
Yeah, usually it's just like
DM each other links.
DMing on Twitter, just like, dude, what about this?
You need to see this. Yeah. It's great too, because it's an archived message.
Yeah, so
right?
We can
like
go
it's an
back
archived conversation. Yeah. Well, what was that thing you said? I don't know. Let me scroll up for 5 seconds and find
out. We're in so many other like group threads on the very social media. I think like Twitter's the one kind of place where it's like, if I get a message from you, I know like, oh yeah, that was specifically from, you know, like Ryan. Like I can look up
probably for
Absurdity.
Like
I can go to this particular thing for Absurdity.
Yeah.
Versus like with others, it's like, oh, what were we talking about that day? I have to go back like 3-4 months. With that one, it's just like the link plus what do you think? Plus maybe a message from the other person. And it's just like really easy to find.
Honestly, my biggest pet peeve with group threads, I wouldn't mind group threads if they always included people with the same phone. The problem is that there's always one Android user.
And that's the thing, is that they mess it up for everybody else.
Yep. At least they got over the problem where sometimes it would send like an individual message out to everybody rather than like, you know, at least they were able to fully fix that consolidation problem. But man, I hate not being able to mute name conversations, things like that. So like naming them is the biggest because naming helps me actually sort them all out. Otherwise, I feel like I'm getting inundated the same way I do with social media in general. It's super frustrating, but oh well. So now that we've sufficiently gone off topic, Tony, you sent me a relevant article on churches and I don't want to spoil it. So I'm going to go ahead and let you give us kind of a rundown of what that article was since you're the one who found it.
So I'm going to actually go and find the actual article that way.
Is that because you forgot it?
No, but I want to make sure that I'm actually saying the correct thing. Oh, that's not you. Why is it? That doesn't match. And this is the other thing. Their description of it is like really, really good. And so I wanted to read it. So it specifically says, churches with declining attendance have found an interesting way to stay open by becoming places of commerce. And the basic premise of the article, which is quite good, is the idea that churches are turning into coffee shops. They're turning into basically taking the same business model, if you will, as like a Starbucks or a Panera Bread. Like we want this to be a place where people hang out. And so churches, for the most part, don't get used, I'd say 5 days out of the week, maybe 2 days out of the week. Like the facilities are being used for the most part. And so they have this open space. And so what they've been saying is, hey, let's rent those out. There's a really cool link to a video that they have. I believe it's CBS that did it. And what's happening is that as they rent themselves out and people kind of come, oh, I like the coffee here, then they can add and say, hey, this is also church. If you'd like to come find a community here, you know, come and stick around. You already know. And so they already know the building. They already know the space. They feel comfortable in that space. And it forces you to make the space workable, I guess is the best way. Like, that's my problem with a lot of churches. I took a class in how to design and build churches. And one of the big things that the professor was harping, and this is a construction guy, granted, this is not a theologian, but who do you want to learn building from, right? Like a construction guy or a theologian? Right. And he's a dude who's built a lot of churches. So he pushed multi-use, right? He said pews, while they might look nice, while they do all that kind of stuff, you can only use them for one thing. Chairs are much better. They're actually
ask a 5-year old what he can use a pew for.
Well,
just
okay,
ask a
but I'm saying like
what he can use a pew
as opposed
for.
To like, all right, but then that's all that space can be used for. So
I mean, yeah,
and
no,
so
I'm giving you
saying
a
like flat, so flat, you know, not don't make it like a concert center or something. Make it flat. Make it usable for a lot of different things, because what you can do with that, especially the way you design it around, like if you, he actually said, don't even have a stage, like have a very small stage or something like that. Because again, it cuts into usable space. And I really, really vibed with what he was saying. And so when I saw this article, it just clicked with me like, oh my gosh, that's so great. Because one of the other kind of side advantages they were talking about is that people feel more comfortable in that building. And one of the reasons why people stopped attending churches, and actually this is a real thing, like from other Twitter polls they've done of people, one of the big reasons why people don't go to church is because they feel uncomfortable in that place, right? Because there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure coming into a place that's specifically designed for God, right? Like a cathedral is built to make you feel the greatness of God. But when you have not such a great relationship with the church, that can be very intimidating, right? Like that, it can give the opposite feeling of what you're trying to go for, which is not majesty, but it's like you have, you know, like, I just want to picture like Gregorian chants and like chains in the corner and like a dungeon is what I'm saying. So I when I hit it, it just was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I think also because one of my dreams, and this is something that you and I and Steve have talked about, is planting a church together and specifically making it like a coffee house or a smoothie shop or something like that on like a public university and just being able to use it like the entire week. I think that to me is just like, I would love that because we actually had a coffee shop in Chattanooga. Do you remember that? The camp house? That was also a church.
It's still there.
Yeah. And so I forget you're in chat now. I didn't even realize it was, but I totally would have gone because I feel comfortable in that space, you know?
Yeah. Well, and this is kind of, there's a couple things that bothered me, not necessarily about the coverage itself, but there's I don't like, so if you go and watch this video, which the link is going to be in the show notes, so don't worry about that. And it'll be on our Facebook, so we'll share it around for sure. But basically, there's a guy that goes in and basically acts as a consultant for these churches to help them transition into a multi-use facility. And CBS did a whole spot on this, like a 3-minute spot. What I don't like, what makes me uncomfortable, is a guy basically, I get that he's finding a need and solving it. I just don't like that it kind of feels like he's preying on struggling churches to do it. But I like what he's doing in general. It just like something about it. And I can't quite put my finger on exactly what it is, but something just makes me slightly uncomfortable.
I can see that.
Maybe maybe it's because if there is, nope, I can't, I don't know exactly what it is. I think the one thing is maybe he might convince people there's a crisis when there isn't one.
I could definitely see that, but from what I understand, like if people aren't coming to your church, then you call him versus like the other way around where he kind of shows up.
But
even still, I could definitely see where you're coming from with that. Because there's always, anytime there's an opportunity, there's an opportunist, you know? For every time you have a place of confidence, there's going to be a confidence man or confidence woman. Confidence person? What's the PC way to say that? I don't know. A con person. Anyway, the point is that I could totally see how taking advantage of a church, especially one that maybe can't help it, can come across that way. But in my head, I'm like, man, I see so many churches that are floundering and don't have a way out. And if this guy's offering a way to make them relevant, like not just that they're relevant, but they also can actually make money as well. Like, I'm like, all right, well, hey, it's best of two worlds, right?
Here's what I find interesting, because at one point, and this wasn't in crisis mode. I mean, yes, the church was dying, but I didn't think like we'll die if we don't do this. But I wanted to figure out a way to serve the community. And so I was trying to figure out when I was pastoring, what can I do with one of my churches? And one of my elders helped people. He basically was like a consultant and he helped people start businesses. And I was like, why don't we use the church as a co-working space? We have all these unused children's Sabbath school rooms because we don't do Sabbath school anymore in these rooms. Why can't we convert these into some office space that we rent out throughout the week? And immediately when we talked to the conference about it and suggested the idea, we got hit with a legal loophole or a legal problem. And this is what I'm curious, and I wish the news portion, the news article touched on. Basically, the church's nonprofit status gets threatened if basically the majority of what you do in a church building has to be nonprofit work. A certain amount of for-profit work can be done out of the facilities, but if it's past a certain proportion, I don't know if it's like 60-40 or 80-20, I don't really remember what it is. This was a few years ago. But basically the church's nonprofit status can be threatened. And with the Adventist Church, because the churches themselves aren't independent entities, it's the conference, you actually end up threatening an entire conference rather than just your independent church.
Right.
That's
well,
specifically
with
Adventism.
That can even go higher to division standard level or country level.
So,
you know, so
yes.
Yeah, I could see that.
It is.
I will say this article is more conceptual for Adventists than practical, pragmatic.
Specifically function within functionally speaking, our system.
It's more of a concept for us. Because again, the conference owns the building, not the church itself or the congregation. So even that's like a different versus, you know, I think even Methodist churches, like the congregation owns the building.
I'm not sure. I think so. Considering that the church I lay pastor with rents from a Methodist church, and they came up with a contract, I think, independently of the denomination.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
I don't know. I'd have to do more research for that. But, you know, Adventism, at least in that context, like, yeah, it's more of a concept that we're trying to bring out as usable space and versus, you know, like, oh, this is something we can replicate.
Because
I think, I don't know, that's the one thing that kind of frustrates me being Adventist. It's like, I feel like every time someone comes up with a good idea, we have to like modify it because we're like, oh, that's great, but that wouldn't work for us. Like,
that's
like,
literally why I started the
so
Lead
many,
podcast.
So many, there's so many just great ideas that I'm like, we can't make that work for us because like Bill Hybels will come up with stuff and it's like, nope. I'll read books, you know, from other pastors on like, oh, this is how to lead a congregation or this is how to do that. And or I'll hear, you know, there's a video by it was one of the Bill Hybels conferences, but a really great pastor. I can't remember his name, but he pastors a church out in Los Angeles. It's called Mosaic Church, I believe. And his name's like McAllister or something, like Kevin McAllister or something like that. And one of the big things for me was like he was saying really good stuff. But then I was like, oh, yeah, that, and I could pinpoint the exact, not necessarily theological, but practical reasons why it couldn't work for us. And that's my frustration a little bit with this article, with this concept anyway, is like, you can't just take it and modify it for the area. Like, you have to make it Adventist in a sense.
Well, here's my biggest problem with this. And maybe this is my problem with the news article or the way it's portrayed, but my big disagreement with this is the motivation for doing the multi-site or the not multi-site, multi-church use or multi-use building. The motivation here is our church is dying. We need people in the building. So we're going to start doing something that serves the community using our campus. Like that really fundamentally that bugs me. And I get that. Okay. Yeah. But they're still doing something good. Like, yes, but the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Like, if what that tells me is that church is actually selfishly minded. It's not meant to serve the community. It's not trying to, like, that's not why it exists. It exists to grow it exists for its own prosperity.
But
Ryan, all churches care about growing. And I'm not saying that. Like it being interested in its own growth is an issue, or is a problem.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is it being majorly interested in its own growth, or only or solely interested in its own growth, is sad to me or is frustrating to me, because like I look at Jesus who taught stuff that made people run away from him, right? He did stuff that people didn't like, and yet he still grew. His motivation was I'm going to preach truth and love people because I value them. And then people will follow.
Right, yeah.
Whereas I need people to follow, so I'm just going to love them as a way to open the door. And I just it doesn't, it's not okay. Like, that's just dirty to me. I don't like it.
To me, I kind of had, the issue I had was a little bit on the other end, where it was like, I don't have an issue with you making money, but again, I go back to one of the reasons why they were doing this is that, okay, are you doing this to, you know, bring people in the building, or are you doing this to make money? So it's kind of the same thing with the motivation, but it was like some churches are doing this to pay the rent. And I'm like, that's where I was uncomfortable.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, no. I think it's a great thing.
It's a beautiful
thing.
That was
my issue with it, was like, this shouldn't be a thing you do to make money, right? This shouldn't be a thing you have to do to keep the lights on. I get that's why, but like sell it and, you know, go to a smaller area or something like that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing where they intersect, but if they don't intersect,
the motivation behind it isn't correct. Yeah, if you're just doing this because you're like, well, we have to exist, so this is how are we going to make money, which I'm not saying they do, but I'm saying if that's how they're coming from it, and it does kind of present that in a little way. I will say that, like, especially the article kind of presents it. They don't see it necessarily as a bad thing, but to me, I'm like, that's not why we're here. We're not here to make money and then also worship Jesus.
Yeah.
Like that, well, the money thing should be a secondary benefit, which is why that's why I said, like, it doesn't bother me what he's doing as long as they're like, hey, and we get to, you know, we're relevant. If they're doing it to make the church relevant, I'm behind that. If they're doing it to make money, that's an issue because, like, one is a change of mentality and motivation, right? Like, they're changing their motivation to be, you know what? We haven't been relevant in this community. This is how we become relevant. And it's taken us too long, but we're going to start now. Versus we're dying. This is a way of staying alive. And it's like, that shouldn't be it. Like, if you're not providing, I don't know. But yeah, so I'm with you on that.
Well,
I'm with
the other side of this is, at least within Adventism, but I see this across the board, most churches were not built as multi-use churches because they were built in the 80s or 70s or 90s. And so, like, literally for them to be able to become a multi-use facility, they have to renovate. And renovation ain't cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I was looking at just updating a couple bathrooms to make them ADA compliant and actually make them, like, more than one person at a time. And we were looking at, like, $20,000 just for some bathrooms.
No, it's expensive. It's no joke. And then you're taking a huge leap with, all right, are the people I'm hiring actually going to do the job? Well, but to me, I think that also brings up this idea.
But Tony, we have brother Jim. He can do it for us.
On that.
He's got a drill and a ladder. Yeah.
Don't get me started.
And look, no insurance.
You know, the funny thing is that actually doesn't happen as much in Caucasian churches, but in Hispanic churches, oh lordy, this happens all the time. I've seen this so many times, and I'm not saying it as a stereotype, like, oh, it happens all the time. I have personally heard and seen with my eyes and ears churches trying to do that, where they're like, oh, well, hermano Ernesto used to build houses in Honduras, so he can totally come and just, like, set all the stuff. And it's like, I know personally of five churches that had to shut down for over a year and a half, one of them up to 5 years, because they were built so badly out of code that basically the county or the city inspectors came in and were like, you need to burn. It would be cheaper to burn this building down and start from the beginning than to start over again.
That's hilarious.
Like, it's a real thing that they try to do this. Don't get me started on that.
Well aware.
But that, to me, I think brings in the next issue, which is, okay, so we're down on this concept of becoming a usable space. And let's say for our purposes that it's minimal, that maybe it's not even, all right, let's say you're not doing it for money, right? Which, while they were doing it for money, let's say you're just, during the week, you're giving out free classes or whatever, right? Like, it's just an open, usable space, right? Community center.
Yeah.
Where do you draw the line with what you are comfortable with what you are going to allow?
Yeah, I think I love that. Like, the examples in the news article were, like, yoga, tai chi, yoga classes, tai chi. I know of an Adventist school that does Zumba classes on Wednesday nights. They're like, they open up their cafeteria and they move all the tables out of the way and they do a Zumba class in there. The next question becomes, if you could convince all of your church members to do this model, the next question becomes, what's appropriate? And that's, I think, where it becomes difficult. And I think one yoga, tai chi, and maybe Zumba wouldn't be allowed in a lot of churches that I can think of. Majority of them. But the one example that I loved from the news article was one of the pastors was saying, we did say no to someone. And it was a person who, it was an entrepreneur who was doing pole dancing classes.
Yeah, that was,
and we had to say no to that.
That was hilarious.
I think so. Yoga, tai chi, and pole dancing. I think it's hilarious too.
I mean, I think, pole dancing, I understand, is a legitimate form of exercise, right? Like, I'm not knocking it as an exercise. Like, it's very tough to do. It works a lot of different muscles and stuff, but I'm just like, I would love to watch someone try to pitch that at an Adventist church. I would literally pay money, just one board meeting. That's all I would want. And I would be happy for the rest of my life. Like, I would be happy.
You can do this. You can be the change you want to see, Tony. You can pitch.
No. Someone else pitch a pole dancing class. Let me rephrase that. I want to watch someone. I would pay money to watch someone else pitch a pole dancing class.
Fair enough. I think the line is determined by every individual church. The same way that we determine other lines with what we do. I would look at what the biggest growing businesses are, or the biggest, you know, in my area, or the biggest need for certain things in my area, and that's where I would target multi-use toward. But I think what this seems to be is if entrepreneurs are approaching churches for this, then it almost sounds like they're just posting on Craigslist saying, we have space for rent on community bulletin boards. We have space for rent. Come call us and let's make this work. So honestly, I think it should be taken on a case-by-case basis. I don't know that there is a, like, if you're going to do it, just do it.
I remember one area, it was an urban church, and I can't remember who was telling me, and I can't remember what they were talking about, but they were saying how there was a group that wanted to, like, use the facilities or as a restaurant or something like that, but they wouldn't let them work. Or no, they wanted to buy the property and build a gas station there or something, and they were like, no, we'll only do that if, or rent the property or something like that, because buying they could do it on their own. But I think they wanted to rent the property and use it as like a gas station or a store or something like that, and they were like, no, we'll only do it if you don't work, or if you don't open on Saturdays and you don't have caffeine and you don't serve meat. And it's like, this is in a super, super duper high-risk area. It's a place where a lot of people would be. They would make a ton of money. It's a super smart thing, but it's like, all right, they've put so many restrictions on it that nobody wants to touch it now. You know what I mean? And it's like, you're losing a legitimate, it wouldn't put you in doubt because you're just renting the it wasn't a legal thing. Like, they were free and clear to do that, but they were like, oh, well, we'll only do it if you completely subscribe to our beliefs. And I'm like, how? You're doing the reverse of what you're trying to do. Like, by trying to be a good witness, by quote unquote sticking to your beliefs, all you're doing is making these people feel like you're being, and I get the fear of like, oh, well, if you compromise in one area, I'm like, but they're not, it's not going to be associated with you, but people are going to drive by. Like, you know how many people actually drive by this place but don't go in and aren't, you know, they don't know about it because there's nothing next to it?
I think what you're doing is you're communicating your standards or beliefs in the most disrespectful and restrictive
way. And that
you are not communicating. That's like saying no businesses. No businesses can eat meat. Cool. What you're telling me, or can cook meat here? Cool. What you're telling me is that I have to give up meat if I really want to join your community, and that's not actually true.
I understand if they're like, no alcohol, right? Like, that's one that I'm like, all right, I can kind of get that, because, you know, they have a school, and that's a different, to me, that's a different precedent, right? Like, that's a different, not story per se, but like that. Like, okay, that's one that I can be like, all right, that's fair. But like, well, you can't do it on Saturday. You can't do all this stuff. I'm like, you know, I feel like it's part of that relevancy where it's like, you're not doing it on Saturday. And if honestly, like one of the arguments I think was that, oh, well, our members will be tempted to go there after church. And I'm like, if that's, first off, like, okay, if your members are that weak that's going to tempt them, I have bad news. They drive by how many different things? And as someone who has gone out to eat, I'm revealing too much here. I would never, I specifically go away from churches when I need to eat on Sabbath. Like, I go, I'm like, all right, where's the church? All right, I'm going to the opposite end of this city, right? Because I'm like, what is the, like...
No, see, that's where they all go. You need to go right next door. See,
but that's exactly it. It's like, how dumb,
you go right
how
next
dumb
door.
Would you have to be to sneak across the street to eat, right? Like,
yeah. No, For me, I think there are easier ways around that kind of thing. Like, for example, if you don't want them to use it on Sabbath, just be like, hey, we don't rent out on the weekends because we want to reserve it for church functions.
But see,
what a awesome idea.
Like, you could totally say that. And but here's the other thing for me, like, especially in this particular case, it was just land, but let's say they were saying the building. I'm like, if they're renting that out, I value so much more the exposure to our beliefs. Like, other churches are like, yeah, okay, come. Like to me, it sets that precedent of if a drunk were to walk into one of our churches today, would they be welcome? Right? If a meth addict were to walk into one of our churches, would they feel welcomed? Would they feel loved? Would they feel comfortable? Would they feel at home? And I'm not saying like it needs to look like a crack house. I'm saying, would the reception we have be like, this is the place for them? This is absolutely the place for them. Or would we feel we have kids here? We have, we need to protect them from. And I'm not saying that has to be one or the other. I'm saying that's the mentality, is we've made it either or, right? Like, obviously you want to make sure that, you know, I don't want to say certain people are kept out, but like, okay, yeah, you don't want bad things to happen, right? But at the same time, I'm like, if a juggalo were to walk into my church, right? Or let's say I order coffee on the Sabbath and there's a juggalo next to me and he's like, I'm just looking for a place to hang out. I'm so lonely. And would I be able to invite him to my church and say, you know what? Come with me. I'm about to go to my church. Would I be comfortable doing that? Would you be comfortable doing that? And to me, it's that mentality. It's you are not welcome here. And I would, as you are, first meet our standards of living, then you will be welcome to be a part and be associated with our community. And I'm like, it should be the other way around. Like, if you truly believe that the health message is important, if you truly believe that these standards are important, which I'm not saying they are not. We had a big complaint because we said that people who drink aren't evil. I'm not saying they aren't, and I'm not saying there aren't biblical principles that say health and all these things are important. I'm not at all arguing that. Let me make myself very clear to the listener who's probably going to hear this.
So you are arguing
that. I am arguing that people who drink should go to hell. No. What I am saying is, if your mentality is meet my standard of truth before I will love you, then you need to reevaluate what you're using your building for, right? Like, the reason why so many of our churches are dying are because we didn't build them with the intention of meeting people. We built them with the intention of there are already our quote unquote people here, so let's build a church. Mm-hmm. Oh, there are five Adventist families. We need a church in this area. That's the wrong way. The right way is, where don't we have Adventists? Where do people need to hear about the three angels' message and the love of God and health? All right.
And experience it. I'm tired. I'm not trying to get on your case, but you triggered.
I hit a nerve.
I hate the hear thing. Can we just say, where do people need to experience it?
Right. Yeah. No. Preach the gospel at all times. Use words when necessary. I'm with you.
Yeah. No. I know. It's a semantics thing. No, I agree with you.
I agree with you that it's not enough to just hear. Yeah. We actually have to live it out. I'm with you on that.
But all of this begs a different question, fundamentally, that is kind of the motivation that I criticized earlier, which is the motivation of, we're in crisis mode. We need to save the building of the church, or, you know, we need to save the building. And my thought is, like, do we really need to be in crisis mode? Like, is it really, really that important that we keep the buildings open? Is it really, really important that we keep the current model of what a church is open in that? Is it really such a bad thing? And I get that there's physical attachment to those buildings. I get a lot of people may have come to an experience or relationship with Jesus, so they don't want to see that building torn down or closed. It's a beacon in the community. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I get there are valid reasons, but should we be so dependent on the current church model or model of church? The physical reality of it, should it be a crisis mode? Especially when you and I belong to a denomination that largely teaches that one day we won't have those anyway. So I just wonder, is it really, really worth being in crisis mode at all. Over this stuff.
You know, it's interesting you brought this up. I can't remember which class. I think it was collaborative ministries between church and school. But one of the classes I took up here, they asked this question. If your church, your physical building and congregation went away next week, would your community miss it? How long would your community take to notice it was gone? And if the answer is not immediate, you need to reevaluate what the purpose of your church is, right? I'm not saying that you need to be so community focused that you don't serve your own members. I am saying—
Yeah, because your own members will notice immediately.
Yeah, right? I am saying, well, but see, to me, membership, if you are a member of the church, not just like a visitor, if you're a member, you go away too. Like, you all get raptured, right? I don't believe in that, but let's say you get raptured. How long would it take your community to notice it, right? If not right away, all right, then you need to change some things. If it's not within, I think they actually say, if it's not within a month, you need to start evaluating. And I'm like, that's too long. Like, I'd say 2-3 weeks at most, right?
Yeah.
Maybe to the end of the next week. Because to me, it's like, if you, you know, that was my struggle. I loved the church I went to when I was pastoring, but when I got there, they had zero community ministries, and they had zero ministries during the week. And I was like, this is not good. And when I left, thankfully, God had, you know, worked it out to where we had a ministry to for the homeless and low income, so that now it would get missed, right? And we people come on Wednesday nights to our youth service and stuff. So, like, people would notice if our church went away all of a sudden, and they have a school as well, so that's also relevant. I should mention that. So they wouldn't miss it for that. But to me, I just go back to, like, when I first got there, yeah, if the church went away, the school might still be there, but if the church went away, yeah, I don't think a lot of people would
miss it. My thought is, if your faith is at all tied to the existence of the building, or is it all tied to the ability to go to a specific place on one day a week, then I think there's a problem. There's a red flag with your faith. That's kind of where I— don't get me wrong, okay? Like, don't miss— I'm not saying any more than what I'm saying.
For
example, I'm not— I think there is, very much so, there is a need for a time of gathering as a community for corporate worship and for some sort of objective perspective being taught to our lives, right? Someone outside of our own friend group, our normal talk, our normal whatever, that brings us a teaching that we are not qualified maybe to even have studied
corporate
on
worship.
Our own as lay members.
Yeah, corporate worship.
Yeah, like, absolutely. I believe in— but do we need the physical church building for that? Or can that not, like— like, is your faith or the strength of your faith really tied to the building, or is it tied to the people that you do life with? And for me, and obviously the God that you believe in and have faith in, that's kind of like a given. But like, for me, I think it's more tied to the God in the community, and it shouldn't be tied to the building. That's where I'm sitting.
I'm going to start putting in my little nerd moments. We need a jingle for that. We need a producer. Like, we need a producer who can just listen in and put jingles for these moments. Can Sugar be our producer?
I was looking at her and thinking the exact same thing.
Just anyway, so this is Tony's nerd moment. So, Thor Ragnarok, have you seen it?
I'm pretty sure you just stole a transition from Freakazoid.
I was from Arrested Development. I was Arrested Development in my head, okay. But yeah, might have been from Freakazoid.
Okay, which was underrated show. Thor Ragnarok.
Underrated show.
Oh yeah, no,
that
all of Steven Spielberg's
so
cartoons
that
are incredible.
That one and Static Shock. Was it Static Shock? No. What was the black?
No.
The black character. He was the black superhero. He was, like, young. He was super hip, and I loved him. He was electric, though. I want to say it was Static Shock. Might have been. Anyway.
Yeah, it was Static Shock, but that wasn't— Static Shock.
He was really good, too.
On, like, the WB? Yeah. I thought you were still talking about, like, Steven Spielberg.
No, he didn't do that one.
The Static Shock WB cartoon
really
was incredible.
Underrated shows. I wish I'd bring him back. Not the point. Yes. Anyway, so Thor Ragnarok, the big question, because the whole time he's trying to stop the end of the world, which is called— Why can't I think of this? I own God of War. He's trying to stop Ragnarok from coming, but the guy who starts... Anyway, Ragnarok is basically this end of the world sequence.
It's apocalypse for Thor's homeworld. Yeah,
basically. Asgard. And he's trying to stop it the whole time. And then he finally, like, his dad comes to him in, like, a memory or a vision or whatever, and he goes, Asgard is not a place, it's a people. As long as the people are safe, there will always be Asgard, right? Mm-hmm. And so he realizes he has to start Ragnarok. Like, Ragnarok wasn't a prophecy of doom. It was a positive thing.
Saving
salvation,
people.
Yeah. And in that way, I was like, oh, that's so cool. That's very much the apocalypse, judgment time. But that's the whole thing, right? Asgard, and that's the real question it's asking, is Asgard a place or a people, right? Is he saving a place or is he saving the people, right? Loki wants to be king of the place. He doesn't really care about the people. Yep. Thor cares about the people, but that's the whole, you know, that's his whole character arc. Because he finally got to the place where he was like, I am king because I care about taking care of the people, not because I want to be in charge.
Yeah. And then Infinity War happens
and they all die. But that's, we don't.
No.
Half of them die.
Half of
the
them
good
die.
Good ones.
Valkyrie is still alive.
I hope so.
Valkyrie's still alive.
I hope so.
No, it's confirmed because of the new posters.
Is it?
Because of the new posters. She's alive.
I haven't seen them.
If you haven't seen the new posters, they released. No, I'm not going to. The new posters that they released, they're like weeks old now. Chill. The new posters they released, some are in color, representing the characters who are alive, and some are dead, featuring the characters who have been snapped. And so Valkyrie is in the colored side.
Okay. All right.
So, and for not just for her. That wasn't a pun.
I get. Yeah.
Avenge the Fallen,
those type of posters.
Yes, Avenge the Fallen, that line of posters.
Okay, good. All right, well, because she was awesome. Tessa Thompson is amazing.
I agree.
I want her in all of this stuff. Her and Zazie Beetz from Atlanta and Deadpool 2. Oh, my gosh. The two of them, put them in all of the things. And Gemma Chan, but that's not the point. So... But in Thor Ragnarok, and I think that's the question that a lot of churches need to start asking themselves, is your church the building or is it the people? And while most people, while the pat answer is, oh, well, it's the ecclesia, it's the people. Is it? Is it though? Because so many of these churches are dead. So many of these churches, and I got to be honest, these little tiny rural out-of-the-way churches, I love them, right? I think it's great that they have five, you know, people in their 90s who come together. I think that's odd. The dedication is amazing.
And I don't want to abandon those people at all.
But we need to question, all right, how relevant is that church to its community at that point? Not in historically, not like, okay, what difference are you actually able to make in your community? I'm not saying that we want to abandon you. I'm not saying we want to throw you in the cold. But you, what led you to get to that point? For some churches, they're just in a place where it was inevitable, right? They were in a place that was sustaining on coal jobs, and those coal jobs are gone because coal is a disgusting dirty material that we should not be using. It pollutes the air and destroys everything and destroys the beautiful mountains that, you know, God gave us.
Welcome to Politics with Tony.
Yeah. Anyway, but those jobs are now gone, right? And so people are leaving those towns. And what do you do when you, like, what do you do when everyone is left? Well, that church, you know, for the eight people that aren't on an income anymore, their lives aren't tied to that source of income anymore, well, they can stay, but they're not really relevant to that community anymore. So those can be in crisis modes. But the majority of these churches are inner city kind of churches they're talking about, right? Suburb or city. And to me, I'm like... The question is not, should you be in crisis mode? The question is, how did you get there? And why did you let it get this bad? Right?
Yeah.
I don't think you should ask,
why did you let it get this bad? Like, I don't think you should ask that question to
No.
To prevent it from happening again so you can identify the factors and move forward.
And to say, all right, what did we do wrong? Because here's the thing. Being relevant and doing things the right way are two different things. And I have to make that super clear. Nokia is the perfect example of this. Nokia did not do anything wrong, but they were not looking to get ahead of the curve. And because of that, they went bankrupt.
I mean, that's Blockbuster. That's railroad companies. That's,
I mean, and you name it. I mean, Kodak's another perfect one. I think it was Kodak and Blockbuster, especially because Blockbuster was pitched by the Netflix people. They go, hey,
yep,
what if you did this? And Blockbuster went, you're crazy. And it was like in an instant. Like Netflix was around for about 5 years, I think, before it really took off with the streaming. Maybe it was around for a little bit longer. But I remember with the DVD service, like it was starting to really catch on.
I remember the mail service.
And then once they started streaming, I remember it was about 3 years. And then all of a sudden, it was like Spotify. Like everyone had Netflix. It was no longer even sustainable to go. Why would I go to Blockbuster? And
you know what the craziest thing about that was? Everyone was laughing at Netflix when we saw those commercials originally.
Oh yeah.
Everyone thought like, why? I could just go to Blockbuster. Why am I going to wait in the mail for this DVD? Crazy. I can just go right now to Blockbuster.
And then all of a sudden.
And they still won.
But that's the thing is Blockbuster didn't do anything wrong. Same with Kodak. The guy, one of the employees of Kodak, it was either Kodak or Fuji. I want to say it was Kodak because Fuji's still around. One of the employees of Kodak said, hey, I found a way to make digital pictures and they're not great right now, but this is the future. And Kodak said, we've been around since the 1800s.
Yeah.
And they're gone. Not just like, oh, they are gone now. JCPenney, Sears. None of these companies did anything wrong per se. And I'm sure that you could look back. And Nokia is the one that legitimately the CEO was like, we literally did everything by the book. But that's what we need to realize. When we are doing church, you can do church the right way, theologically and even practically. But if you are not relevant, if you are not asking the question constantly, what does our community need? How can we reach our community? How can we best present this message? Mm-hmm. You will be left behind. And that's why you have to ask, how did we let it get this bad that we're in crisis mode? Right? Because yeah. every church should be asking how do we stay relevant essentially every year, right? Yep. Every voting cycle, you should be asking that. Like, okay, what can we do new? What's working? What isn't?
Yeah.
But
politics do give you a pretty accurate picture of like what the pulse of society is within your context. They can give you like local politics especially. I definitely see the validity in around voting years or campaign elections, like figuring out like what is important to the people in your community and what can you do to what can you do in those situations and around those problems. Like, absolutely. I can see a lot of potential there. 100%. But I find it funny because there's so many churches that say like we need to be in the world, not of the world. And I'm sitting here thinking like you're so dead. You're not even in the world like,
you need to actually be in the world, though. Like.
Yeah, there's an in the world portion of that that you're kind
you're
of
not
missing.
In the
here.
World, you are you have, and I mean that's the thing. Okay, so this is not to knock necessarily, but if you look at the Amish community as a whole is reaching the same problem that the German community as a whole, natural, quote unquote Germans, right? They're not making babies. And there's a major crisis because people are focusing on the career and not on making more Germans. And so without immigration, they're literally saying Germany could go away, I think, by 2050. Like it will reach like a major population crisis, right? So thankfully they have immigration and they're bringing people in and they're trying to stave that off and trying to, you know, find ways to spur growth. But if you look at the Amish community, it's the same thing because they don't really go out and convert people, which is where at least to me, even though Adventists don't do evangelism, in my opinion, the correct way, at least they value it to me. I'm like, all right, well, at least we want to actually go.
Yeah, there's
and
potential
grow.
To actually transform it yeah, if people
exactly.
value it to begin
and
with.
So we just value tradition more, unfortunately, at this moment. But that's neither here nor there. To me, I think when you go back to, all right, are you looking to actually grow or actually looking to present it the right way, because I'm not necessarily saying that you need to change what you're saying or how you do it. What I am saying is the wrapping that that comes in needs to change, right? Whether that is becoming a yoga center, you know, having dancing classes, whether that is opening a coffee shop or a you know, our church has a, you know, the one that I was talking about, when they built their new church, they incorporated a smoothie bar in the lobby. And that was something that I was the most proud of, like, that idea was there. And I was like, you know, we really ought to move it in this area. Like, that was the one thing that I kind of got listened to. And I was the most proud of, because I'm like, this is so huge. That is the relevancy that's needed. Because when youth come in, you can turn that into a cafe area, right? You can turn that into a place of meeting and hanging out and being a part. And that's what you want, are these areas to actually live life in. And if you can do that, great. Go for that, because being relevant, I think, is important. And that's what helps keep you, I think, not needing, that's where having a physical facility can become an asset instead of a drag. Because otherwise, do a home church, right? It's cheaper, it's faster. Most church plants are home churches, and I'm 100% behind that. I think you should. I mean, if you can find a space that works for you, that's fine. But meeting a home, it's so much nicer. Like, we have a great area here.
Well, there's
in the home we're living in Berrien Springs, which you need to come up and visit so you can see it.
I'm literally coming up this week.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you need to come by. But like, we have a great space. Like, I would be totally comfortable having a home church right here in the living room we have, right? It would get messy. It would be an issue. For sure. Like, there would be a lot of complications with it, but I would totally love it because it feels warm. We have a Vespers that meets here and it feels warm. Even when we have 20, 25 people, it still feels like people can know each other. They can talk to each other. They can meet. I've met some of these churches where you go and it's like, even though it's a small church, I felt disconnected. I didn't feel welcomed. Right. And it's not necessarily just about how I felt. It was like, you are not doing certain things, right? From an analytical standpoint, I was watching and saying, you are not doing these certain things. You're not being relevant. You know, they only use Adventist language. And those are the types of things that when you have a physical building, it allows you to stay within the bounds of what you're comfortable with. And you end up not being able to reach away and say, how is this impacting people? Right. Because I will feel uncomfortable walking into a cathedral in my jeans, but I should feel comfortable walking into a church in whatever I'm wearing. You should be a visitor, not me, sorry. A visitor should feel comfortable walking in no matter what they're wearing. They should feel like, I can come into this place and feel at home. And sometimes not having a physical building can be such an asset.
Yeah, I agree. There are two things that I'm actually interested in. One of them is, I think, a side of this that we haven't considered yet. Actually, I think both are. One, I would want to know the tax benefits or tax problems or cons that would come from doing a house church model. There is great benefit in being able to donate to your denomination and having that be tax deductible 501c3. Getting away from buildings affects that. Within Adventism, it definitely affects our structure. And our ability to give and how all of that happens. Like, there's a lot that goes into that for sure. But I, you know, that is all stuff that needs to be considered. But my main point that I want to really talk about here is, I think there's a huge negative to doing multi-use or a facility that I hadn't even considered until just now, which is this: the more time your church members are spending in your building, the less they're actually out making an impact in the community. And if you are pulling in everyone into your church throughout the week, then you're not actually going out and supporting your community and the businesses that already exist there, right? So if I turn my coffee shop, if I turn my lobby or my you know, my sanctuary, worship center, whatever, into a coffee shop, I'm now competing actively against local coffee shop owners, regardless, especially if I'm offering it free. So there is, I think, a real economic impact that should be considered here. Now, don't get me wrong. The people that come in, I'm definitely serving them, right? We're definitely serving the community that comes in. But you're also, you are putting yourself at odds with some local businesses and potentially local politicians as well, who can work against you. And so this is something that I do find interesting is how you go about this, I think, matters. Yeah. And building positive let me give you an example.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Crosswalk Chattanooga is the church that I lay pastor at. And one of the things I love is we started serving, we bought an espresso machine. We serve espresso on Saturday mornings for free. There's no payment allowed. But the beauty of that is we actually partnered with a local coffee vendor to provide what we do. Like, that's the kind of partnership that I would want to see if you're doing it in a local church environment. What I don't like the idea of is just like importing some Starbucks coffee or doing something right, different that actively competes with the people in your community.
Well, and I think that's where you go back to the case on case basis, right? If there's already a community center, and again, I go back to, are you doing this for money? Are you doing this to stay relevant? Because if there's already 18 coffee shops, making a church into a coffee shop in Seattle, right? Not needed. But having a community garden,
you're making coffee shops into church.
But having a community garden, right? On your church property, to me, I think that's it. It's like find the needs that need to be filled, and find a way to create a space in your church that can fill them, right? Soup kitchens. Traditionally, those have been also, there was a church in Florida that was like, they were a hurricane shelter, and they were so good that they literally became like the people who moved into the area were like, oh yeah, you need to go to this church, like know them because this is, they do it the best way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's okay. That's perfect for Florida, right? What do they always need? Hurricane shelters. Why? Because every year there's a hurricane. It's almost like God is saying, don't live in this horrible place. And I'm kidding, to all Floridians, that was a joke.
So is Florida. Yeah, so, no, and I say as that a Floridian.
But like, all right, New York, community gardens, Portland, I don't know, hair dyeing stations, things that are relevant to your community, whatever your community needs. I would love to do like a trivia night at your church, right? Take your facility and, I'm not saying, oh, well, if there are, sports pubs or places in town, there wasn't any place in the town we were at that did like a trivia night. You know what I mean? Like, we weren't competing with anyone. Like, it wasn't a place to go do something like that. They just don't do that there. So it's like, find a way to do that. 5Ks, marathons, right? Oh, that's there, Portland. There you go. Do a 5K, right? Sponsored by your church. Whatever. Like, do some, like, over here, like, they have a McKee. What is it, 10K? Or something in Chattanooga?
I don't remember.
It's a race. Yeah. Now, ironically, it is sponsored by McKee Foods, which, they make Little Debbie products. So there's kind of a subtle irony there in that. But even then, Chattanooga is starting to become a green city, right? Like it's a health conscious place for the most part. And so I think that there's a lot of relevancy in that. And now people are saying, oh, hey, McKee Foods. Well, where is that? Oh, look, it's, Southern's helping out. Southern is doing this. Cool. What's Southern? And those to me are the things that you can do to become relevant in where you're at. And I agree with you. Don't compete because, again, if the purpose is just to make money, then yes, then that is something that you're going to have to deal with. But to me, if the purpose is being relevant and becoming part of a community, then you won't be competing because by nature, you're trying to find the space that is already needed, the things that are not being done.
Yep. And I want to clarify here as we kind of wind down, because it can be easy to wonder like, okay, so we talked about this, but now what does this have to do with absurdity? I think the absurdity in this episode, the thing that we find absurd, and maybe we should start doing this to wrap up episodes, or maybe it should be the first question we ask after we introduce a topic is why is it absurd to us?
Here's your moment of hooey.
Churches should have been serving their communities all along. That's why this is absurd. Like, you should be doing relevant ministry in your city, neighborhood, suburb, wherever the heck you are. You should be doing active community partnership on a regular basis already. The fact that we are just now starting to become multi-use facilities is ridiculous to me. It is absurd to me that is. So if you're curious, that's where the inspiration, I think, for this episode came from. Is like, really? great that we're finally doing it, but
it shouldn't have to take, It shouldn't take you needing to close the church for you to sit there and say, all right, how do we become relevant in our community? That should be a question that you're already asking. Yep. So for those of you out there whose churches aren't not on the brink of getting closed, start asking that question now. If you are not already, and if you are,
start asking it before it's a problem.
Continue to ask, right? Continue to ask the question, how do we stay relevant? How do we become an integral part of our community? So, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Do it. I agree.
Well, thank you guys for listening to Absurdity and for being on this journey with us. If you want to subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/absurdity podcast. Every dollar helps us out and helps this podcast be successful. Tony, thank you for being on for this and being a part of this, man. I love you. I love you a lot.
For all of those who can't see, I'm doing finger guns to Ryan.
Yeah. It's pretty great, actually. Visual gags and podcasts are always a great thing. And yeah, if you follow us on iTunes, please don't forget to rate and review us. That helps with visibility. Tell a friend about us too. I don't know why I haven't been saying that, but tell a friend about us. Share the episode on Instagram. Do whatever you can to help us become more visible. More listeners means also more potential to keep this going. So thank you guys so much for all the support you've given, just for listening and for your time. And we'll see you next week.